Seems like every time they say this time is different.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever.
I'm over you saying that it's different every time.
The show's not going to end. Except Sylvester McCoy, but that's a different story.
That is a different story. Poor Sylvester McCoy. He tried.
Moment of Who. Hello, and welcome to your Moment of Who. I'm Sue.
And I'm Casey.
And we are talking about the fifth Doctor today.
Peter Davison, who is Georgia Moffat's father, and then she played the daughter of David Tennant, and now they're married, and they have kids, and that's just weird.
Is that bad? That's what that song just became for me. You turned into Kristen Wiig.
And I'm Junie's. And that is your SNL reference for this episode.
Wow. Well, in order to pick our fifth Doctor episode, we actually consulted Mr. Simon Meddings first, who is one of our Classic Who experts and certainly considers Peter Davison his favorite Doctor. So we went over a list of different serials with him and then put the vote up to the group. And the winner by a landslide was the Regeneration episode, The Caves of Androzani.
What's funny is that I did not know it was the Regeneration episode.
Really?
I went into it just not knowing anything about it. And then it got to the last episode of the serial. And it got to the part where Peter Davison is carrying Perry. And I'm like, this part seems familiar. And then they get to the TARDIS and the Doctor falls down and I'm like, I've seen this in documentaries. This is the Regeneration episode. Why didn't no one tell me?
Kind of unusual for a pick for, as a representative pick for a Doctor, but, you know, widely considered his greatest episode, if not the greatest episode of the classic series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought it was okay. Well, not just okay. I thought it was a good serial, but I don't know if it's the best televised Doctor Who story of all. I mean, maybe in Classic Who, I don't know. We haven't seen the entirety of Classic Who. There's a lot of material there, but there was just like a lot of bits that didn't really mesh for me, but overall I thought it was great. I think the ending was better than the overall story that led to the ending.
What I really noticed in watching it was the complexity of the plot, mm-hmm. in the sense of Morgus and his sort of, he's in the middle of this war and he's got gunrunners to supply the war, even though he puts on this front that he wants the war to end, this whole big conspiracy thing.
Mm-hmm.
But for the first time, at least in Classic Who, the reasoning made sense. And it wasn't complex to the point of confusing. It was complex to the point of interesting. And I think that was done really well.
Yeah, I can see that. I'm not sure about the way Morgus was played.
You mean that whole, like, breaking the fourth wall thing?
Yeah, where it was pretty much Shakespearean asides, where kind of like when Hamlet talks to the audience.
Yeah.
And anyone who's not a classicist would stare at the stage and be like, you know that there are two other people in that scene that can totally hear you, right? It doesn't translate well on TV or in movies.
It only took me out of the scene once, to be completely honest with you. And it was the time where he does it, I think it was towards the end of the serial, where he's talking on the view screen, I guess, and he just completely does a 180 to address the camera and then turns back. That was the only time it took me out of it. The other times, I guess I just accepted it. But speaking of the view screen, too, I realize, you know, this is later and broadcast in the early 80s, but I felt both kind of like in style and color a lot of similarities with The Next Generation. So
yeah.
Like we're coming into that, I guess, era of TV. Even the guys with their uniform, they had blue, red, and yellow uniforms.
Yeah. General Chalak was wearing Kirk yellow, Salatine was wearing Spock blue, and then all the ensigns were wearing red. So I looked at the episode and was just like, oh, all the people wearing red are going to die. They even have the red cloaks. They even have the red cloak ceremony. Oh, they have everything organized. And the little people in monster suits, I feel like they were underutilized. I feel like they were just there to be there. I didn't feel like they were necessary.
Well, they weren't really the villains.
Why have them?
Well, because you need something scary.
But Shiraz Jack, the crazy madman in a mask, wasn't scary. He wasn't scary enough for you.
Oh, another thing. When I was watching him, I kept thinking of Scorpius.
Me too. I thought of a mixture of Scorpius and the Phantom from the Phantom of the Opera. But whenever Shiraz Jack came in and talked to Perry about how beautiful she was, I just kept hearing, "High time shop and heightened each sensation." He did kidnap her.
No more Andrew Lloyd Webber. I am banning Andrew Lloyd Webber from this podcast.
It was very homicidal, kidnapper, crazy, and you're supposed to feel bad for him because he has a burned face.
Yeah, which did not seem to require that the type of reaction it got.
Well, like, if you compare it to Gerard Butler's face in the actual Phantom movie, it actually looked more grotesque, like it's supposed to, but I was expecting, like, a third eye, no nose whatsoever, like acne.
His face is kind of melty. NBD.
It's melty, but that's it. I've seen worse. Also, if we're going to criticize a little bit, I have to talk about Perry's accent. I have to. It was very cool to see an American companion. I was not expecting that. But then she started talking. And I had flashbacks to Tallulah from Evolution of the Daleks.
Oh, my. With the first couple words she said, I thought she was supposed to be Australian. I'm sorry, any Australians who aren't listening.
I realize that accents are very hard to do. I find that especially the American accent, even just standardized American accent, is really hard for actors in other regions to do. Because in my region, you have the hard R, or some people just skip the R entirely, like in Boston, pack the ca. And I think that's why a lot of people go for the Southern accent as the typical American accent, because it's more lilty.
Southern is supposedly the easiest one to
yeah.
get.
Yeah. I mean, Benedict Cumberbatch played a Southern dude in August Osage County.
Well, half of The Walking Dead is British.
Yeah.
Maybe not half, but quite a few of the main characters.
Yeah, a few of them, yeah. But yeah, it seems like the Southern accent is the easiest to do. And Perry is giving it a go at just a non-regional American accent. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she breaks sometimes. And also, apparently she was supposed to be the hot companion because, oh my god, skin.
Yeah. Yeah, I noticed that as well.
And I read somewhere that she was the first companion in a bikini. I guess that's in the sixth season? With the sixth Doctor?
Oh, all right. So she sticks around for the sixth Doctor.
Yeah. And also, it seems like the fifth Doctor and Perry didn't really know each other that well, and yet he's still willing to die for her. Which, in a way, I think is cool, but it also forces a lot of aspects of their relationship as well.
Well, I feel like, as a Time Lord, if you are taking on these fragile humans, you have a responsibility to protect them.
Yes. Yes.
Whether or not you know their entire life story.
Yeah, that's very true.
You know, in my experience as a Time Lord.
Who have you regenerated for?
I like to think I regenerated from Ethel Merman.
Aww, that would be a cool regeneration. I'd like to regenerate into Angela Lansbury, please. Not from, into.
Into, yes.
Let's get back to the story. What aspects of the episode did you like most of all?
I think I liked all of it. I mean, I said it before in the sense of the conspiracy story, but there was even more than that going on. There was the dependency on this drug. There was the fact that until it's refined, it's toxic. There were the androids and the androids taking the place of the people.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the love story, if you can even call it that, the Phantom-esque plotline kind of skeeved me out a little bit.
Yeah, that was gross. The Phantom-esque story skeeved me out a lot. And at the end, he's being so tender with her as she's dying, and I'm like, oh, no. She wants her space as she dies. I don't care what the doctor says. Get out of her face.
But it all, there was so much happening, but it all made sense, and it all worked mm-hmm. for me. I thought the set dressing of the Spectrox was a little cotton candy machine.
Yeah.
But what are you going to do? You can't argue too much about that. I mean, just look at Tasha Yar's wound from Armis, and you can excuse almost anything in 1984.
Mm-hmm. You know what I really liked? Mm-hmm. I liked the PA person for Morgus. Timon, the Wikia says? The woman in the weird blue dress with
yes.
the pixie cut? Yeah, I loved her. She just screws him over. She's like, oh, your demise is delicious. And I'm the boss now. Goodbye!
Yeah, she knew what she was doing this whole time. We stopped talking about Perry. I didn't get a feel for Perry like I feel like I did for the other companions we've seen.
Yeah.
She was kind of meh for me.
Me too.
But I did like Peter Davison, and I see how Tennant may have taken inspiration from the Fifth Doctor, Time Crash is to be believed.
Yes. Let's see, what is her first episode? First scene in Planet of Fire. I really like her full name.
Yeah, what is that name?
Purpugilium. Purpugilium?
Purpugilium.
Purpugilium. Oh, yeah, her first serial was the one right before Caves of Androzani.
Oh, so she is brand new.
She is brand spanking new.
Okay. And even for someone he doesn't know very well, he's willing to give up a life to save mm-hmm. her. Good on you, Doctor.
That's nice. That's nice. And the episode was directed by Graham Harper, who has directed episodes that we've seen from current Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm. I believe this was his first one, or at least his first credited.
Mm-hmm. I also read on one of the wiki pages that in this episode, Graham Harper had a different directing technique where a lot of the directors for Doctor Who would direct from a box on stage, but Graham would actually be on the floor having direct contact with the actors and the crew. And Peter Davison allegedly said that he was sad that he didn't have that experience before his last episode.
Yeah, apparently Peter Davison had a rough time of it as the Doctor and resigned because the stories were not great. And then, to Meds mostly, later said that if he had read the stories before he resigned and knew what was coming, that he wouldn't have done so.
Mm.
But that's part of the reason why the Doctor is regenerating in the middle of the series.
That's sad. And I can understand that why Peter Davison is such a popular doctor after Tom Baker, because he seems really cool.
Yeah.
He wears celery.
For a reason. Who knew?
I think I read in an interview somewhere that the costume was not his idea, though.
Is the costume ever their idea?
It is for current doctors. I don't know what else to say about this episode. It seemed pretty straightforward.
Yeah. It's just so dense, because it wasn't intended to be watched all at the same time, and yet that's what we do.
And now we're used to seasons being drawn out, and there's a season arc. And we're lucky enough to have cable shows that only go for 13 episodes per season.
If this were an idea they came up with now, this would be a season. This would be 13 episodes of a current season. And I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I don't know if this is just, at least this episode, because it was really tight, I don't know if it's just tight storytelling or mm-hmm. if our storytelling now is just lazier.
If this episode were a season arc, I would love it. I think it would be so good.
I think there is more here that can be expanded upon.
Yeah.
Or could have been, rather. I'm not asking for it to be done again.
No.
But the regeneration was interesting. You never... It's like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. But I'm curious, did viewers at the time know?
That's a really good question. Because nowadays, we're told when the Doctor is going to regenerate. We're prepared for it.
Well, I mean, we're so... The internet.
Yeah, for the internet.
We know as soon as something happens, and then we're waiting. We know who the next Doctor is going to be and what his costume is going to look like before the regeneration ever happens.
Yeah.
Or at least we did this time. But I'm wondering if in, you know, in 1984, did Who fans know? Did they know who was coming in? Did they know what to expect? Because just from, you know, the 15, 30 seconds that we saw the Sixth Doctor... He is vastly different from the Fifth Doctor, even the Fourth Doctor. They both were seemed kind of, you know, lighthearted and fun, even if they were sometimes a little arrogant. Because that happens. All of the Doctors have been arrogant at times. But the Sixth Doctor is just a jerk.
Yeah.
And it from what I've heard, it seems that impression sort of stuck around, and that's when viewership started declining a little bit for Classic Who.
When I went into this not knowing that it was a regeneration episode, I thought it was so interesting that he was suddenly regenerating or dying, whatever order he decided to do that in. And I didn't like the Sixth Doctor's lines. That wasn't cool, but the fact that that was happening and I wasn't aware of it and wasn't prepared for it, it was kind of fun. It was kind of fun to be surprised. Anything else?
Bat's milk, gross.
Ew.
Gross. The Doctor had to milk bats, y'all. Oh, yeah, but no, I'm done.
All right. So, obviously, next month we'll be covering a Sixth Doctor episode. We'll have a poll up again for the Sixth Doctor.
Sometime in June. Early June.
Yeah. Pick a really silly episode from the Sixth Doctor season.
And I think that does it for us and our weirdness for this episode of Moment of Who.
Probably. This one is particularly strange.
Yes.
Okie dokie. This is Casey.
This is Sue.
And this has been your Moment of Who.
If you wish to contact the Anomaly Supplemental, you can at the email address, which is moregirlygeeks@gmail.com. That's girlygeeks with a Z at gmail.com. Or if you like hearing the sound of your own voice, like I do, you can call the voicemail line at 248-419-GEEK. Yes, it's one of those numbers that you can use alphabets on, and that's 248-419-4335. Check out the Anomaly blog for geeky articles and Anomaly supplemental show notes. Find it online at anomalypodcast.com. That's anomalypodcast.com. Anomaly was created under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 Unported License. Say that three times fast.
Isn't it sad how when things are actually good, it seems like there's less to talk about?